You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the July 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing Digitally Speaking by Corey G.B. Sickles, WA3UVV, A Summer's Potpourri. When restoring with these, you must copy back each set of incremental media before you are as current as you can be. I prefer global backups, even though they may be more time-consuming, as they are also the easiest to schedule and require the least amount of hands-on time for those using the computers. Most of us do not have heavy loads of data, and USB sticks, thumb drives do not cost that much, especially when considering the amounts of data they can hold. Having a simple ABC rotation of backups ensures that you also have two prior generations of data available, even if those will not be the most current. They will be more current than having to rebuild everything or having to write off your losses and start over. For businesses, a month-end backup is a very good idea. Making a set of off-site backups is an even better idea. You might have a break-in, fire, or flood in your office, but having it happen in two locations on the same night is astronomically less likely. I remember well a small accounting firm that was the victim of a break-in, where the junior high school-aged kids involved stole dozens of backup floppies and tapes, thinking they could reuse the media for their home computers. Because there were no off-site backups, the accounting firm lost clients, had to lay people off, and soon went out of business, as the reputation of everyone involved with the enterprise was damaged. As prolific magazine entrepreneur Wayne Green, W2NSD, Silent Key, often stated, "Learn everything you can off someone else's money." As I was finishing this month's column, I received word that Dr. Alan Katz, K2UYH, had become a Silent Key. Al was a prominent member of the Packrats Club, located near Philadelphia. He was also a driving force behind the New Jersey State Conventions in Trenton, as well as a founding father of the Trenton Computer Fest. As a computer hobbyist for more than a half century, this is how I first met him. Those with an interest in our UHF bands and EME will also recognize his name from the 432 and up EME newsletter. Students and alumni of the College of New Jersey, Trenton State, will also know him as the head of the electronics department. It seemed that in all matters in which he involved himself, his enthusiasm was infectious. Amateur radio and many other electronic communities have benefited immensely from his presence. Also, as I type this, field day is quickly approaching. Although it is supposed to be an exercise in short or no-notice deployment, when situations require a rapid response, much last-minute preparation takes place in advance. Also, there are the inevitable "forgot to bring that," "it worked last year," or other surprises. There are also the happy surprises when all works well, because of good preparation and through-the-year practice sessions. My hometown amateur radio club will be operating from our property, using hardware that is already in place and our designated EOC stations, while running exclusively off-grid by virtue of a 40-kilowatt generator. Because of the heat and the even higher heat index, the ability to have air conditioning is a blessing. Advanced planning is illustrated with this solution, as we have had the ability to take the building off-grid for a number of years when incorporating generators that we already had. Proper electrical code-compliant disconnects are essential. Safety for all involved is essential, too. If you are participating in field day, whether individually or as part of a team, I wish you every success. May you also learn from what went right and what could be improved. Be sure to enjoy some of our digital modes, such as CW, RTTY, FT8, and more. And now FM Band DX by Lloyd Van Horn, W4LVH, W4LVHSC@gmail.com. Hello, is this thing on? Where are all the sporadic E's? Every morning, I have a little DX routine that must be completed before I can start my day this time of the year. And I suspect a lot of us are in the same boat right now. First, I pull up my internet browser and review my FM-RDS autologger map to see if any decodes came in overnight or in the morning. I'm usually looking for Tropo here, along the Gulf of Mexico, but more recently, my attention has been focused on looking for any sporadic E decodes that might be indicative of an opening occurring. Alas, the only decodes lately are my usual 150 to 200 mile locals and Tropo scatter stations. On to the next step. Next, I pull up my instance I have running on SDR console. In this instance, I have set up individual VFO receivers to park on each of my open frequencies on the FM band here in Mandeville. More on this below. This allows the built-in RDS decoder in SDR console to log each and every RDS code that it finds along with the time date stamp. This will be compared to the FM list RDS database I have loaded into SDR console. More on that in a bit too. To validate the decode. In my review, I'm looking for decodes where there is a confirmed match, and then checking to see where the station is located. This season, it has been mostly just the usual assortment of locals and marginal Tropo catches. Then I pull up a map that shows the last 30 minutes of activity on fmlist.org. I discussed this in a video on DX Central, titled How to Spot a Sporadic E Opening in the FM Band. This will show any receptions reported by DXers through FM List and plots them on a map. It allows us to be able to spot openings to see if there are any potential or common paths for sporadic E openings anywhere in the world. This can be helpful, because even if you don't have an opening in your neck of the woods, these clouds do move. So, if there is one out there that could drift your way, you definitely want to be prepared. But every morning this year during my little routine, the map is blank. There are no logs to report because there have been no openings to speak of, with a few exceptions, in North America. To be fair, there are a handful of US DXers that have seen some action this summer. Several DXers out west have had impressive hauls, and there have been a few sporadic openings from time to time in the central and eastern U.S. But the vast majority of us have been skipped over almost entirely. Okay, there was one opening here in southeast Louisiana that lasted about 3 minutes on one late afternoon, and I was able to snag 3 relogs of some Canadian stations. But that was it. 3 stations. And they were all RDS decodes found after the fact, and all 3 were relogs. So what gives? Where are all of the sporadic E's? Well, it may come as a surprise to some of you, but they are called sporadic E's for a reason. They just seem to pop up out of nowhere, and to this day, no one has been able to say definitively, with any certainty, what causes or suppresses them. So, when we have these long lulls of inactivity, it becomes the guessing game as to why. Many are pointing to the recent increased solar activity and barrage of solar storms as the root cause of our dearth of FM activity. To those folks, I point you to Europe, where they are living like kings, dining on nearly daily sporadic E openings into the FM band. Some of those are pretty massive openings, too. I saw one day in particular this season where they had nearly 12,000 logs reported on fmlist.org, and I am sure that number will increase as folks have time to flush out logs from their IQ recordings. So, I'm not sure how much stock we can put into solar activity as a cause for or against sporadic E. Sure, a big storm will neutralize the FM band during the actual storm event, but as the rest of the radio spectrum recovers quite quickly afterwards, so too should FM. Others will point to thunderstorm activity as a developer of sporadic E. There is a problem with that. We have had a very active and very potent storm season this year in the U.S., and we are still sitting in a sporadic E wasteland. Last year, thunderstorm activity was much lighter, and we had a fairly decent season. It wasn't as good as, say, 2021 was, but it was much better than this last year. We do know there is strong evidence that high-level winds interact with tiny metallic meteor fragments in the E layer of the ionosphere, creating the clouds of reflection that reflect FM signals. This interaction peaks during the summer months in North America, and we get a small bump in late December, early January, thanks to summer in the southern hemisphere. But being able to predict this, or fully understand exactly when and where this will happen, is still a mystery. The legendary FMDXer, Pat Dyer, spent the better part of his life chasing the mysteries of sporadic E. He was the first to collect any significant data on FM sporadic E openings and attempt to conduct scientific analysis of that data. And this was in the days prior to SDRs. And yet, here we still are, scratching our heads and trying to tame the wild beast that sits between 90 and 150 kilometers above our heads in the mysterious E layer. But there is reason to have hope, my friends. We aren't ready to write this season off entirely just yet. While there is no way of predicting what is to come from the E layer the rest of the season, there is historical support for at least the possibility of an active second half of the season, after a mediocre or just plain absent first half. In talking with several DXers this summer, they point to seasons such as a few in the late 90s where May and June were mostly completely absent of sporadic E, only for July to unleash a monster series of openings. From Pat Dyer's own research, I can point to sporadic E seasons such as 2016, which saw 440 minutes of sporadic E openings in May and 770 minutes in June, but then ramped up to 1,600 minutes in July and another 895 in August. May and June that year saw a combined 15 days of sporadic E activity in his research, where July alone brought 18 days, and August another 9 days, of sporadic E activity. Then there was 1997, which saw a dismal 4 days of sporadic E activity in May, totaling 125 minutes before June exploded with 19 days and 1,550 minutes. Activity continued into July, with 9 days of activity totaling 725 minutes, with a few brief openings in August as well. In fact, the years between 1997 to 1999 were some of the lowest periods of activity in the 44 years of data he collected, with an average of roughly 30 total days of activity and between 2,600 and 2,800 minutes of activity each year. Then, in 2000, things rebounded in a big way, with 60 days of activity and more than 7,000 minutes. Even if this season turns out to be a dud, there can still be some good to take away from it. For instance, 2002 was the lowest activity year in Pat's dataset. That year saw a total of 24 active days and 1,215 total minutes of sporadic E openings. However, there were 4 openings in July, totaling 250 minutes of activity, and another 5 days with 370 minutes in August. So, while not a lot numbers-wise, July still averaged about an hour per opening, with August at 74 minutes per opening. That is plenty of room for some good catches to enter the log. Plus, a year later in 2003, It was an amazing season with 58 days and 7,360 minutes of openings. Things can change pretty quickly. So while I can offer you no concrete reasons for our lack of sporadic e-activity this year, I can offer you perhaps a little glimmer of hope that not all is lost. Sure, the season could carry on as it has been, and we will be sitting here in the fall looking back on an FM season that never really got going. That is a possibility. We could also be sitting here in the fall looking at a massive stack of long-duration IQ recordings we have to go through and shaking our heads in disbelief at how great the season finished. Just in case we lean to the latter, let's refresh some techniques we can be using to prepare ourselves for a possible bounty of sporadic E. Updating your RDS database in SDR console. I did a video on this for the DX Central YouTube channel, walking through each step, but this has been very valuable in helping me review the validity of my received RDS decodes. The basic premise is that by logging into fmscan.org using your credentials from fmlist.org, you are able to download a list of stations and their related RDS PI codes for Tropo, Sporadic E, and Meteor Scatter propagation from your location. Then, once those are downloaded, you import them into SDR console. From then, whenever an RDS code is received, SDR console will compare the received code to the imported database. If it finds a match for that PI code on that frequency, it presents a checkmark next to the displayed RDS code. This is a huge help, not only during live DX events, when every second counts in knowing exactly what is being received, but also for IQ recording review, as well as in the SDR console decode log file. What is that, you ask? The SDR console RDS decode log file and use of multiple VFOs and receivers. I have written in these pages previously about the glory that is the RDS autologger from Rabbit Ears. There is another method, though, that we can use to autolog RDS decodes natively within SDR console for later review. First, let's talk about the log file. Every time SDR console decodes an RDS signal from your received station, it puts that decode in an event in a decode log file. It will add a time and date of the decode event and also indicate in the log file whether or not it was able to match the received code with a previously mentioned database import of RDS codes from fmscan.org. To find your decode log file in SDR console, click on the Receive option in the menu of options at the top: Home, View, Layout, Receive, etc. Then, make sure the Broadcast FM button is engaged, and click on the little down arrow on the button. From there, choose the option under RDS Windows that says Database. This brings up your RDS log file showing all received RDS codes. On the log file, these are the columns you will want to pay attention to: start time, the actual date and time of the decoding event; megahertz, the frequency where the decode occurred; PI code, the actual PI code received; dB, this will have either a negative marker or will say yes. If it says yes, that means it found the received PI code in the imported FMScan database; call sign, the station received; and you can also look under country, which usually shows the location of the received station, but not always. A few notes about this log file before we get too far along. You can just ignore the stations that do not have a yes under the DB column if you have completed the RDS code import mentioned above from fmscan.org. Those decodes may or may not be legitimate, but it is much less likely if it didn't find a match. Another thing to keep in mind is that some stations, especially those with iHeartRadio, almost all of which are codes that begin with a 1, will share RDS PI codes. For instance, I have a Tropo regular on 94.5 that comes in at times and carries the code 12FF. On the log file, and in my RDS decode window within SDR console, it shows this station as being KBDN in Bandon, Oregon. But the station is actually WFLF in Parker, Florida. This is where having a reliable station list to compare to, such as fmlist.org or the WTFDA database, is a huge help in sorting out exactly which was received. Also, it isn't decoding all frequencies at all times, only those frequencies you are actually tuned to within console. So, if you have been sitting only on 92.1 MHz, it will only show you decodes received during that time on 92.1. However, there is a way to expand the decoding to other frequencies through the use of multiple VFOs and receivers. Back to the Receive tab we go. This time, look for the section labeled Manager. Here you should see a dark blue plus button. Pressing this button will open up a new VFO receiver. On the right-hand side of the Receive tab, you will now see an extra speaker icon with a frequency below it. From there, you can tune this second VFO to a different frequency you want console to sit on. You can repeat this for as many open frequencies as your SDR bandwidth and your computer performance will allow. Here in Mandeville, I have 15 fully open frequencies. So, since I am using an SDR with a full 24 MHz of bandwidth that allows me to see the entire FM band at once, I added a VFO for every one of my open frequencies. I can use this in two different ways. One, I keep my instance of SDR console open, and it will be constantly looking for and decoding RDS codes on each of those frequencies. So, when I go to look at my RDS log file, I will have a much better chance of getting something. 2. When I am looking to see if there is an opening, I can do a quick review of each of those VFOs, click on the speaker icon to unmute that VFO and mute all others, to see if I hear anything. Additionally, you can also open a separate window that will display up to 8 VFOs in a single window, so you can visually monitor them at the same time. Once again, in the Receive tab, click on Receiver Pane, and this will bring up the new window. Look for the 3 dots button in this window to open a pop-up settings window. From there, you can adjust your receiver pane options to change how many receivers are displayed and more. You can also view all of your open VFOs using the matrix option, also on the Receive tab. This allows you to see up to 6 VFOs at a time with full controls over changing filters, modes, etc. If you have more than 6 VFOs loaded, it will give you an option at the top of the window to click through multiple pages of receivers. Either through the receiver pane or the matrix, this can be a fantastic way to determine if an opening is occurring without requiring any audio through your speakers. A few years back, I did a video for DX Central that walks through several other strategies for spotting sporadic e-openings. There are some good tips there that DXers can use to help them be ready on the chance that a sporadic e-opening finally materializes. Don't give up. Look, I know it can be demoralizing when the ionosphere doesn't provide for us. We wait all year for spring and summer, and we start daydreaming about the amazing openings. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.